Welcome to the Beekeeper's Corner Podcast. November 16th, 2025, episode 286, Foxhound. Hello, everyone. Welcome into the corner, the Beekeeper's Corner. I'm Kevin England. Today, I'm truly excited to share that I have a one-on-one episode with fellow EAS Master Beekeeper, Adam Hickman. Adam, welcome to the show.
Hey, Kevin. Thanks for having me. I appreciate your time. Appreciate you putting on the podcast and most of all, just inviting me to be on it.
Yeah, and we caught up at EAS this year, and I really appreciate you making time for the show as one of the invited guests for the EAS episode. And we spoke on the side after that session and made a promise to reconnect. And today's that day. I know as far as beekeepers having stuff going on, you couldn't be more crazy. We're going to talk about a new store you're building, Hollywood movie, and other things might float to the surface. But I want to start with what we typically do when talking to beekeepers, to just get a little background. You know, I think beekeepers, when they hear another beekeeper talk, they always want to know where you're located, how long you've been keeping bees, how many bees you have now, and things like that. So if you don't mind, Adam, could we start with just a brief introduction?
Yeah, happy to talk about that. So this was a hobby. It started as a hobby, just like pretty much every single beekeeper. And I think it was 2012. I had a little bit of time. I thought I had a little bit of money, and I had a little bit of space, and had in the back of my mind decided that, like, at some point in my life, I'd like to be a beekeeper. So I was newly married and decided to give this thing a try. I started going to local beekeeping clubs and learning a little bit. So I started with one hive. It was a 5-frame medium nuke. I did 10 frame medium boxes when I started, and I just did one single hive. And I started that and really, really loved it. And that was, I live in Birmingham, Alabama. So I had some property that belonged to a family member, and I just put one hive out there and haven't looked back. To really, really enjoyed the hobby.
Birmingham is a city proper, right? I've never been to Alabama. Just curious, are you in cityscape or land, you know, outside city?
It's kind of a standard semi-populated area. So we have a city center with big buildings and international airport, and then suburbs all the way around it. And then outside of that is agriculture. So we are, Birmingham is at the very end of the Appalachian Mountains. So we have a couple small little hills, mountains that run through the city. We have actually a very diverse ecosystem in Alabama, because we have the mountains at the northeast side of Alabama. And then when you get down to the southern side, we have our bays and our ocean, or Gulf of Mexico, or I guess Gulf of America, I guess it's officially called. But we have a lot of rivers. So we have a really great location to keep bees. Lots of good rainfall and flowers for them to forage on.
You're south of Tennessee, but north enough to not be crazy hot there, right?
It will get into the high 90s consistently. This is mid-November right now, and we had our very first freeze last night. So we're cold enough to get snow. Don't get it every single year, but every 5 or 6 years we get enough to sled in, and for the schools to close down and everything. But we're still hot enough where we got plenty of mosquitoes, and it is it'll get up to the 100 degrees easily.
Yeah, we got below 32 for the first time last night in New Jersey too. And you're kind of west, but on the same parallel as Atlanta, Georgia. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah. We're kind of a sister city of Atlanta. We get freezes, but the last night was a pretty early one, and it was down to 22, actual temperature, which is pretty low for us. And it, unfortunately, killed a bunch of the blooms. They were perennials, so hopefully they survive.
Yeah, all of our herbs are gone, unfortunately, the basil and all that stuff that we've enjoyed all summer long. How many hives you currently have, Adam?
The number is always floating around 20. It always give or take around the year. I honestly, just being truthful, I keep less bees and manage them a whole lot less than I used to. And that is just a function of time. All beekeepers can relate to that. So I've got three boys. Youngest is three, oldest is nine, and they do sports. And I run Foxhound Bee Company full time, and have aspirations to do a lot of things. So time is very, very limited. So I can't keep as many hives as I used to, but it is still nice to pull frames and teach people. That's something that I really enjoy. It's just honestly just helping other people learn beekeeping, and there's no better way to do that than just pulling frames and inspecting a hive.
Anybody else in the family help you, or you're doing it mostly yourself?
My middle son helps as much as a 7-year-old can.
Yeah.
So it's mostly just hanging out with dad. So I call it the pet hive. I've got one pet hive in the backyard that we'll like manage together with them. But the rest of them are at my store.
Yeah, my boys were the same way. They kind of meandered here and there every once in a while. You'd conjure them to get a bee suit on. And then as they got older, they got a little more interested in every once in a while would come out and actually do different sessions with you. So it's fun to do that. But given what we're going to talk about, what you have going on, I can't imagine having that much time to even work bees, let alone have them. So, but you do make a little bit of honey there for your business, right?
We focus on keeping the hives for the sake of education. So at one point in time, I did like a host a hive program, and I kept bees like all over the Birmingham area, and that was successful. But I spent more time weed eating and driving than I did actually inspecting colonies. So I kind of retracted that program a lot, and now it's just down to one location. But I've really kind of focused on the using the hives to teach, and make some honey from them. But it's really not, we're not in the animal husbandry side of beekeeping, as far as our store goes. That's not a focus for ours. So we partner with a lot of other really great beekeepers that they can do what they're good at, and we can do what we're good at. So that's kind of the business that we built, and it's been successful.
So we're going to talk about your training center that you're building and a couple other things, but you and I went through EAS Master Beekeeper together, and I know that you're called upon to do training here and there and so on. And you got an interesting call in 2023 to do a Hollywood movie with Matthew McConaughey. And you and I were talking about that at EAS, and it sounded like an amazing experience. Tell us a little bit about the name of the movie and where it was filmed and some of your involvement.
So it was called Rivals of Amziah King, which is a crazy name. And when I got the script, I had no idea what this was. But it helps you to understand that Amziah is a first name and King is a last name, and Rivals is like competitive beekeepers. So if you think about it that way, it starts to make a little bit of sense. But yeah, in 2023, I worked on this movie for a good 2.5 months during that summer, and got to work with actors and train them how to be beekeepers, with Matthew McConaughey being the main actor, the main beekeeper, the person that the movie is about. So I got to do that for a summer, and that was like an incredible experience to be able to do that. And that just fell in my lap, honestly. Wasn't expecting it. I only had about 3 or 4 weeks of heads up from the time somebody from the team walked into the store to I was on set and shooting and training. So didn't have a lot of time to plan that at all.
Well, what was the story for the release date on that movie?
Delayed and delayed and delayed again. So it was shot in 23, was supposed to come out in 24, but they still had to shoot some more scenes, so they couldn't finish it. And then the last I heard is that they're waiting for a distributor, and I don't know this world well, but they were working on finding a distributor that would actually take the movie and go to the movie theaters or Netflix. So like Netflix is a distributor, And I think like Lionsgate, like they're a distributor. So I don't know that world well, but the producers produce the movie and then they sell it to a distributor. And then the distributor takes it out to the masses, whatever way works best. So they had to do a little bit more shooting in 24 that I assisted with. I got to go to the grand opening, or I'm sorry, the premiere, and that was earlier this year in 25. And then I don't know the master plan for it. I just know that they intend for it to go to theaters, and they're just waiting for the right time to do that.
It was originally scheduled, if my notes are right, around March. Is that when the premiere was?
That was when the premiere. So I got invited out to go to Austin, Texas, and be a part of the pre-party, I guess, and then also the premiere, and got to see it as a member of the public for the very first time. So Matthew was there, most of the actors were all there, and that was a really incredible experience to be able to sit in the theater and watch it with all these people. And watch these bee scenes that I did with a team of other beekeepers for the very first time. And my heart was like about to beat out of my chest. It
Yeah.
was like I was so nervous watching these things because I know what it looked like when we did it. I didn't know what it looked like when they edited it. And I was just like so nervous that it would look good. And I was impressed. Like everything I expected happened. It was better than I expected. It's going to be a beekeeper's movie.
That's so cool. I gotta ask the question. You're standing in your store and somebody walks in and asks you to be a part of a, I think that's what you said, right? Be a part of this movie.
That's right.
Take us back to that moment when the person walked in. Like, what was your impression when they asked you? Did you think it was real?
So they kind of buried the lead. They don't walk in and say, "Hey, I'm doing a movie with Matthew McConaughey. Do you want to do this?" So they kind of kept their cards close, and they originally just walked into the store because they wanted to see. It was a set designer, and they wanted to see like how do we stock things, how do we organize things, like what are the things that beekeepers have? Because this was an old warehouse, so we had retail up front and warehouse in the back, and we had our old honey box, our boxes with comb in it and big blocks of wax and all that kind of stuff. So she just wanted to kind of see how we organize it. And we actually, she, we worked together as a freelancer years before in my previous job. So we kind of knew each other a little bit, but it was kind of a glancing relationship. But she came in and checked out the store and really liked us, and we ended up just going out to the bee yard and like we put a jacket on her and opened up a hive, and she just had a really great experience with us. And then that just kind of led to one conversation after another. They had some other beekeepers, and they didn't have a good feeling about working with them, so they ended up basically releasing them and then hiring me, and then I brought on four other guys to work on it with me.
Wow, that's what a cool encounter, right? Who knew you woke up that morning and next thing you know, one thing leads to another. You mentioned your old store. I want to pivot and talk about a video I saw recently. You were closing the store for the final day, and I watched that video through, and I could see it was such a bittersweet moment for you, showing some of the reasons to move on, but some of the fond times it looks like at the facility that you were in. And I saw external shots of your store. It looked really professional. I liked the way it was laid out, different things like that. Let's talk a little bit about your old store and then we'll talk about the new store. And I love to explore the journey of moving on. When did you open your old store?
It was I started moving product into it from my house in storage units. It was fall of 2020, so during the pandemic, and then spring of 21 is when I actually like opened it up and had like actual store hours, brick and mortar store hours. So that was spring of 21.
Were you in bee business before opening the previous brick and mortar?
I mean, people ask me like, "When did you start your business?" And I don't know how to answer that question because is it like when I got my first bees? Is it when I did the LLC? Is it when I did the website? Like it was, it was doing all of this for a living was something I never allowed myself to think about because it was so implausible that I was going to do that. I had other plans for my career, and this beekeeping thing was an outlet, just like it is for most people. I re just really enjoyed it, and I thought, like, this is cool, but I'll never make a living out of this. I was always an entrepreneur, always kind of had that in me, and knew that I was going to do something, just didn't know what it was. And I would think it was 2016 or 2017. I kind of like had a website and started selling some things, and it just kind of grew organically one year after another. And it got to a point where I couldn't maintain my full-time job and this pseudo side business that turned into
What was your full-time job at that time?
So for almost 10 years, I used to write recipes for food magazines. So if you opened up any food magazine and you see a recipe, there's a group of people behind it that made that happen, and one of those was a recipe developer, and that's what I used to do. So it was Southern Living, Cooking Light, Real Simple, a little bit of Food and Wine, Coastal Living, Eating Well. I just did a lot of different brands, both like prints and then also digital with some video. So that was my life for about 10 years. And then I slowly kind of transitioned into the bee stuff until I couldn't go through one more spring of being full-time recipe developing and also this side business that was just actually consuming my life. And we were having kids, and my wife's like, okay,
Yeah.
people need to stop coming to the house.
How do you start selling things? Like, how do you did you find a network? And I don't know, what was the first thing you sold? I know one of the things you sell is a line of bee jackets. Was that the opening, or how do you pick what to start with and then add new products and build those relationships?
I mean, it was the stuff I was using already. So just think about, like, if you went to a bee company and you bought a bulk pack of boxes, you would get a better rate. So I would do something like that, and I would use it for myself, and then I would sell the excess because it was so difficult to find equipment in my area. It was actually like a waiting list to get a guy to build you boxes. I just started buying stuff and then selling the excess. And then with my like food background and digital magazines and print magazines, and I worked with photographers a lot. I had an eye. I kind of knew what good product shots look like, and I just looked at all my competitors and I was like, I can do better than that. So it doesn't take much to be competitive online. And the things have changed since then, but if you take good photography and you write good listings and have good customer service, you can go a long way with having an internet business.
Yeah, very true. This is the first of a couple. I talked to different people who own stores, and that's one of my curiosities is how did you get in the business? How do you make the connections and whatever? The store you're leaving, how big was it? What was the square footage on that?
If you asked me in the fall of 2020 how big it was massive. Like, I could never have imagined needing anything else. But if you ask my staff about 6 months ago, they would have said this place is tiny. And to keep it in perspective, it was a shelf in my garage, and then it was the back half of my garage, and then it was my whole garage, and then it was a lean-to that my brother and I built. And then it turned into all of that plus a storage unit, and then all of that plus another storage unit. So to move into the space in downtown Birmingham that was approximately 5,000 square feet, it was massive. But we filled it up over time. That's what you do, right? Like, you move into a house, you fill it up.
Yeah, we were joking. You're sitting in the office of your new building, and I noticed how empty it was. And I joked with you as we came on air here that you're going to fill that room. And that's just how it goes, right? It's not a hoarding thing. It's just a matter of the more you do, the more space you need to do it. So that's a pretty fundamental principle of a business like yours, right?
I mean, I remember I had to purposely slow the business down because people were asking for jackets and smokers and hive tools and all those things. And at the point I was just selling boxes, and cypress equipment is kind of our niche. We don't sell any pine. It's all cypress equipment, which is a great wood to use for beehives, and it's native to the South. That's where we started, or that's where I started. And then I got to the point where I like people were asking me for things, but I just didn't have room to store it. Like, just think about if you are selling jackets, think about like how many different sizes of jackets, and you have to have access to all of them. So I just said no to a lot of things until I got more space, and then I started saying yes to the things that matter. I mean, there's you look in those cat B catalogs, there's a ton of things you do not need. Like, we actively like talk ourselves out of sales all the time, because there's just so much stuff you don't need. And like, we have a little flyer that we give people, and there's five things you need to get started. You got to start or stop somewhere. So we pick five, and it's like, you need equipment for the bees to live in. You need a way to feed the bees. You need some type of protective gear. You need a hive tool, and you need a smoker. And like, that will get you really far when you first get into beekeeping. So as we kind of grew, we started adding more and more things as customers asked, and I had to break this mold of I only sell what I approve of. And for a long time, I kind of used that as a no, don't I don't want to sell pollen patties. Those are like small hive beetle breeding grounds. Like, I don't really use them myself. But I had to kind of get over this, like, customers like them and they use them, and replace small hive patties with or protein patties with anything else. So we just kind of expanded over the years. But I mean, to answer your question, like, that space that we moved into was a 100-year-old building, and it was about 5,000 square feet. Whereas this new building that we're in is also 5,000 square feet, but the entire thing is retail, classroom, or there's a couple offices and like a bathroom. So we had the same amount of space, but it's pretty much all public facing, all retail. But right behind it is three 9,000 square foot warehouses. So we have moved into basically two of those. And the other one is being rented out, so we have room to expand. We've already filled up one of those warehouses already, but the second one we'll move into shortly. And who knows what will happen in 5 years.
Yeah, I mean that's the funny side of it is for everything that's in the retail you talked about. I was building a catalog today for t-shirt sales. And when you start looking at you have youth all the way through and then adult all the way through and it's extra small, small, medium, large, extra large, 2X, 3X, 4X, whatever. And if you're carrying just t-shirts for that kind of stuff, or in your case, bee jackets, the space required for that stuff to have at least one or two of everything, let alone, you don't buy one from the store, right? Wherever you order it, you buy a lot of them, and then you have to hold them until you sell through the catalog. So there's a lot of logistics, which I think is quite interesting. And if you had to make a guess, how many business partners do you have that you source the goods that you sell out of your store?
60, something like that.
Yeah. And I would imagine that through the year, keeping in contact with those 60 providers is not a trivial effort, right? As to connecting back with them, ordering things, shipping, logistics. Finding out what new products they have, their salespeople are calling you, and all of that. I mean, I think there's so much of the fabric of running a store, I'm imagining that people don't really kind of keep a sense of, right? They just walk in and buy themselves a new smoker, and now I'll have one of those and one of these or whatever. But the service that you provide to the community by having that, how many bee operations like yours are there in the Birmingham area, like within 40 miles of you?
I mean,
Probably not many, right?
like a store that like that type of environment.
Yeah, like a full-fledged store.
I mean, really the only thing that is available is either like a guy's garage or like a tractor supply. that kind of thing. And
Yeah.
you walk in, you go in Tractor Supply, and they may or may not have something, and they definitely don't have anybody there who knows what they're talking about. So it's hard. I mean, that was one of the kind of the genesises of doing this stuff, is like things seem to be available pretty easily, because just like I do, like most beekeepers do not plan, and a lot of them buy their honey boxes in March, April, and May. They
Yeah.
buy them in August, buy them in September and October.
They're painting them and putting bees in them the following day. Yeah.
Which is great, because we sell a lot of painted and assembled equipment because of that right there. Yeah, just like it's hard to get equipment, and it's also hard to have somebody to ask questions. I mean, beekeeping is local. I mean, you do things so differently than we do in New Jersey. And I went to Apomondia. It was in Copenhagen this year, and I was there, and I also was in Norway. I did like a beekeeping tour, and beekeepers are kind of the same all over the world, but beekeeping is like different. And they do things like extremely different than us, and they look at us like we're crazy. I'll just say like one thing that they do that is just blows my mind is they don't use any plastic foundation, which is fine, but there's a whole economy of using wooden frames and wax foundation, and then melting it down every single year.
Every year, I saw the video of that that I think you shot, and I was astonished at that. Love it. I thought that was really fascinating.
And I mean, you think about all the positive side effects that come with that, that you don't really think about. But I mean, just holistically, like as far as pathogens and viruses in the environment. But I just thought that was just so interesting. And there's people who, they melt down the wax, and they clean the frames up, and then they sell the wax blocks to a foundation manufacturer, and they'll remold it and sell it, give it back to them, and they'll wire it back into the frame and sell it back to the bee, or give it back to the beekeeper. So it's just an interesting thing. And everybody here in the US is saying, cycle out your frames every 5 years. And if it's a honey frame that never had brood in it, like keep that thing forever. Like don't ever get rid of that thing.
Was it your video where they showed him steaming the wax off? Is that, yeah, I did watch that. Okay, Apomondia, we'll put that on a list for someday maybe to chat about, because I so wanted to go this year, but it just wasn't in the cards. But okay, so now the question I have to ask you is, you operated this store, you started selling things in 2016. You open the store, you're running, you're full-fledged, whatever, and you're going to make a change. It said you started on the new store in February of 2025, but you really started on the new store when? And you got to start with, I'm guessing, a clean sheet of paper, and you got to design the space. So take me through I can't imagine what that journey is like. I decide I'm going to build a store. You had to find a location and all that other stuff, notwithstanding. But now you're looking at, how do I set the footprint up? I was trying to design my kitchen in the IKEA kitchen designer thing. You could get lost in that so badly. So take me through a blank sheet of paper, and now you're sitting in the building. What was that like? What was that like?
It's a it's really like a blank sheet of paper and a wish list, but it's also like good people around you to help like make these things happen. I think we broke ground in February, which is crazy that like that wasn't that long ago. I don't have any hair really, but it was a lot of gray hairs ago. But like it really kind of started about 2 or 3 years ago, probably about 2 years ago, and had somebody that was like an advisor, and he was like a economic developer for the Birmingham area. And he just kind of opened my eyes to say, like, what are you going to do in 5 years? And you would think, like, as a business owner, you're always like, here's my business plan, and here's my SWOT analysis, and here's my 10-year plan, and my 5-year, and my 1 year. And like, when you're an entrepreneur and you're grassroots and you bootstrap the whole thing, you don't have a CEO and a CFO and all that kind of stuff to do all these things. It's a lot of this is just like internal. But he really opened my eyes to what do you want this thing to look like? And so I kind of spelled it out to him, and I said, you know, my growth has been great, and this is not sustainable. So I need to either buy something or build something. And fortunately, I learned what we needed. Because I forced the thing to grow slow, I made a lot of mistakes when I was younger. I don't know if younger is the right word, but when the business was younger, made a lot of mistakes. And fortunately, those were $10 mistakes and $100 mistakes. But I learned through like kind of stair stepping up into this place that what works and doesn't work. And I learned that like I need maybe a loading dock, but not just a loading dock. I needed to have a dock leveler. I needed to be close to multiple interstates if I can. I knew like a general idea of how many square feet that I needed and what kind of stuff I wanted to put into it. So it was a lot of conversations between that advisor who introduced me to some other really good people. And like, for instance, like banks, like I didn't have a relationship with my bank. It was just like a general, you know, bank that it was, I think it was PNC. And I kind of went in there and kind of got the cold shoulder about just like having a business line of credit. It was like the whole business was bootstrapped, but I kind of wanted to have a line of credit just in case. And that simple thing was so complicated. And I kind of told him about that experience, and he's like, you know, you need to have a relationship with the bank. And he's like, here are five names. And so he gave me these names, and he said, you need to email them all and talk to them all. So I emailed them all and sort of parsing through them. And then I met with like three of them and just interviewed them basically, and decided which ones I mesh with really well, and found one that worked really well. And they're still my bank, and they helped see through this entire process of building this. But I did the same thing with like insurance and financial advisor and all those things. So same thing with like an architect and a general contractor. Like I sat down with all these people and had interviews with them and figured out what's the best working relationship. So it was a piece of paper like in the beginning, but it was really all these other people having their own blank piece of paper that were helping like design this whole thing. So I had a really great architect, and the building, we're gonna submit the building into some architectural contest because it is pretty unique for what we did. It's purpose built for this one purpose, but it's also like affordable. Like we broke ground in February, and we were done at the first week in October. So we built this thing really, really quickly,
Yeah.
and it has good design to it.
You did a great job chronicling the build too. We were seeing routine. I'm subscribed to your newsletter, so I saw the shots of the progress and stuff. But I want to come back and ask you this one question. Your long-term plan. I don't know. A lot of stores are like a Manlake affiliate or whatever. I don't know if you have any of those connections or you're just doing it on your own. Do you work with a big company like Manlake or Dedant or something?
We can buy their stuff, but we're not a dealer for them. I mean,
Okay, so.
I guess we are. We fit the definition of being a dealer for them, but you know, I would say as for Manlake, I'd probably say 5% of our stuff will come from them.
And that is not, as I come to know, unusual. I know someone who owns a bee business. And they get some of their stuff from this vendor and some from that vendor and some from that vendor. And yes, they buy stuff from Manlake and have a relationship with them and also other large providers like BetterBee and such on. You go where you can and you never know where the world's going to take you. But the question is this, 5 years from now, you have a single location you're building. Are you going to put multiple satellites? What is your aspiration to grow, or you plan to just stay where you're at with one location? Do you have that vision, or what was your long-term thought?
We kind of built it as an e-commerce business. So even though we just had this one location in Birmingham, we really are kind of known nationally, and we ship internationally frequently. So I don't plan on having multiple locations, per se. What I probably would do is try and bring more manufacturing in-house. So instead of having 60 suppliers, I have 30, and a lot of it is done in-house. So that's probably the direction that we'd go, rather than have another location, because there's better ways to kind of squeeze the lemon than kind of building another store, as much as people would really love to have a dedicated B space in their area. We'll probably just kind of lean into using the assets that we have here, and make the most of them.
Will people, do we talked about Atlanta being not that far off. How far of a drive to Atlanta for you?
2 hours.
2 hours. So that's a pretty significant run. And if somebody called you and said, your blueprint's amazing, we would love to open a Foxhound Atlanta branch and we'll franchise or something like that, would you ever consider it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you don't know what the opportunities are until they walk in your store and ask you to be a part of a movie. So
Yeah.
I'm not one to say like I'll never do these things, but you don't know until the opportunity comes up and somebody might look. I mean, I get sales pitches all the time, not for that, but for plenty of other things. And most of it is an absolute waste of time. But the situation may come up where it just makes perfect sense to do that. And we'll see. Let me know if you know anybody. What
Yeah.
about New Jersey? Heating New Jersey. What do you guys have in New Jersey?
Fox North. it's funny is there's a Grant Styles, I'm sure, is probably the biggest provider out here. Others are, like you said, people who have the container in their yard and you go buy their stuff out of a small little mom and pop store. Betterby is quite a few hours north of me, but I've been up there and yeah, it's just kind of a regional thing mostly, but Grant Styles is probably the biggest provider in our area, and he's in Fords, New Jersey, which is not a significant run for me. From I'm on the other side of the state of New Jersey from him, so but he's a Mann Lake dealer, and he has just about everything. You go out to Pennsylvania to B Works, which is in Doylestown. That's another new starting business. Does an outstanding job. I bought a lot of stuff through them and been out to their place when I've been one of those fee keepers who waited last minute that you talked about. Yeah, it's a little hodgepodge of everything, which is, I'm sure, what you have there too, which is why you opening what you're doing has got to be like a pillar of the community to every beekeeper for 100 miles knows your store. I'm positive of it, right? That's just the lay of the land.
I mean, the whole Southeast, honestly. I mean,
Yeah.
even at our old store. I mean, it was a cool 100-year-old building. The roof was probably 100 years old too. So we had some built-in water features that all of our local customers know about. But it also didn't have heating and air. But it was a cool building to walk into, just
Yeah, it
like
was.
any old 100-year-old brick building. Like, it's just cool to walk into it. Like this whole building that I'm in is like it's designed to be an experience. Like Betterbee is a cool place to go. Like you'll drive hours to go up to Betterbee because it's like a beekeeper's shop. You know,
Yeah,
all
it
people love
is.
it. Yeah, and it's just neat to go to. And
Have you ever been there? The one
I
in
haven't
there?
been in there, but like I know
Oh my
Kate,
God.
and I've seen a lot of their content. And I'm like that seems like a cool place to go. And I know a lot of people just love making the drive up there. And that's what this will be, but with a twist of, I'm thinking about like the next generation of like I don't want to say beekeepers because like I don't want just to produce like beekeepers. Like I want people to like be stewards of our bees and our environment and support other types of bees, not just like the honeybee. Like we know the honeybee is awesome, but like I don't want people to walk into a store and be discouraged because, hey, we need $1,000 or $1,500 or whatever it costs to be a beekeeper. Like, and you and I both know that beekeeping is not for everybody. And there's a lot of people that should absolutely not
Right.
do it at all. So like, I want those people to walk out and not be a beekeeper, but also have like a real appreciation for like how cool bees are. That a honeybee is just one of 20,000 types of bees, and we have all these other ones that are just as important. They can look at our observation hive and see the tube of bees like going in and out and learn some things about why they're important. So I think like we're gonna be a beekeeper shop, but like I wanna be a place for like people who have no interest in ever becoming a beekeeper, that want to stop by and like have a cool experience.
I have to say, what you went through is kind of like a mix of an intellectual. I would love to have taken a shot at the design thinking, because one, I know you had to build a retail space. You wanted to build the education space and set that up so you had a good experience, and you've been to more than enough conferences and whatever to know what a good education space looks like. You focused on an outdoor education center, and then from what I know, obviously you have a lot of retail that you have to, you know, when you go into, let's say, the classic case of a McDonald's, the floor plan or a Wawa. Do you know what a Wawa is?
We do have those. I don't
Quick
know. We
check.
have them here. We have them in Florida. But yeah, we have them. Yeah.
I mean, the study of designing the floor plan for egress and people moving around and how much space do they need when they're standing there and looking at whatever is on the shelf and stuff. You got to go through all of that experience with your architect and communicating what your priorities were and making your trade-offs and all of that stuff. I can only imagine how it must be exciting to invite people in and watch them walk around the store and see, oh, they did what I thought they would. They turned left here and went and did this, and right. I can only imagine what goes through your head as you're going to watch people wander through the space.
Yeah, that's definitely part of it. I mean, there's you walk in the door, I mean, there's a line of sight to the observation hive because whether you've been keeping bees for 50 years or you've never seen a bee, you're gonna look at an observation hive. It doesn't matter. Like, it's just cool to see that. So like we're definitely that's something that we want people to see, and that obviously takes them to the far wall of the room. Historically, we've just been a place to like you just get stuff to be a beekeeper. But like I mentioned, the solitary bees and the mason bees, like we partner with like crown bees to bring those types of like hives in. So we had a lot of conversations with people who were like, I've got a garden. You know, that's how a lot of people start beekeeping is like I've got a garden and I didn't see any bees on it, so I'm in here. What do I do? And honestly, like for a garden, mason bees and leaf cutter bees, those are like way better pollinators than honeybees are. Honeybees are great just because there's so many of them. That's why it's just like a mob of bees. But as far as like being specialists and being concentrated, like leaf cutter bees, mason bees, which you can actually buy and get mailed to you, they're so much better at pollinating because they stay like in your yard. So, you know, honeybees, they fly 3, 4 miles or whatever. That's a lot of other people's gardens that they're pollinating when they could be doing yours.
D-Day is right around the corner. November 22nd, you're having your grand opening, and you're doing both a physical grand opening at the store and a virtual grand opening through YouTube, I saw. Take us through what you have planned for the day.
The YouTube one is a we'll see how that goes, right? You know as well as anybody that technology doesn't always play nice, but we've got a great little camera that could stream all day. So we're gonna record all the events of or not record we're gonna stream all the events of the day to a YouTube channel so people can see it from afar. Because I know that a lot of people aren't able to come and. They want to see it, and there's no reason not to do that. Is it inexpensive enough, and it's not a big deal to do that. But as far as like the events of the day, it is. I've had like suppliers who are like, "Hey, we want to come and be a part of it," and they've asked like, "Can like do we set up a booth? Do we do that?" And I'm like, you know, this isn't a day that we're like gonna have like massive sales and. You know, deep discounts. Like, well, it's not going to be like a bazaar of beekeeping stuff because, like, I'm really turning this into a celebration of like the event and celebration of having this space ready. So, the ribbon cutting is at 11, but throughout the day from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m., we've got events planned to like highlight the space and highlight what we're doing well. So. One of those focuses is having education for like kids. So we had a meeting today, and we've planned 2 summer camps that are all like beekeeping related, or you know, bee related, not necessarily beekeeping related, but they're kids camps, and we can have a camp of 20 to 30 kids for 5 days for at least half the day. So we're planning that. But during this grand opening, we'll have a couple like kid activities, one in the morning, one in the afternoon. I've got a buddy of mine. You might know him, Yappy B Man.
Yeah.
He's got a he's in Alabama here. He was actually one of the guys that was on the movie with me. So he's gonna come and do like a meet and greet with Yappy. He's gonna help us. He's gonna help us like do some like fun games that are like beekeeper games. We'll have like a wax dipping tank. Not like you throw balls at it and you fall into the the molten wax. Not like that. But like a wax dipping tank for like you can bring your wood, any like equipment that you buy from us on that day, we'll like wax it for free, or we'll wax it like super discounted. Bring your own stuff, and I'm imagining that being like a turkey fryer situation. And have you ever done that before?
No, I've done the wax dipping before, yeah.
But no turkey frying.
No turkey fry. No, I don't want to blow anything up in
Okay. Yeah,
the
the turkey frying thing is like a you just stand around and watch it and talk about things and whatever. So
Oh,
I'm
sure, it's
imagining,
amazing.
yeah, it is good. It is delicious. And there is safe ways to do it. But you can bring your boxes, and I think people will come and like hang around the wax dipping tank and ask questions. We'll do a couple like warehouse tours. I'm gonna do because I'm like a chef, or I used to be a chef. I don't think I think if you are a chef, you're always a chef. But I'll do some some honey tastings that I like to do with honeys that we don't sell, but like to kind of open people's eyes up to what are the different types of honeys available. And there's a couple that I like to like. There's three that I like to put out and I actually show people like, look how diverse these are, and they're all just like pure honey. So I'll do that. So we got a bunch of little classes and things like that kind of planned throughout the day.
Yeah, I have to ask a question. I saw the pictures and I really don't know what I'm seeing is. Tell me about the mural on the side of the building.
Yeah,
How did that come about and how did they put it on there?
that's not on there yet. Hopefully it's supposed to start today. The weather's not playing nicely with us right now, so it should start today. But it'll take about a little over a week to do. But it's going to be a swarm hanging on the corner of the building, and it will probably be 30 feet long and about 18 feet tall, and it will hang on the side of the building, and it will actually on the edge of our building is this little like point, and there's a big hexagon with a light in it, and so the swarm will it'll look as if it had flown by, landed on the side of this building, and is like wrapping on the corner.
What a cool feature. That's really neat. I saw the illustration of it. Foxhound Bee Company, all spelled out, right? .com.
That's right.
If you go to the homepage and click on it, there's a countdown of the event 10 days as we're recording this, but November 22nd, and you can click on it and see all the stuff you have going on. I'm assuming you'll get a YouTube link there at some point and
Yeah, it should be on there. If not, we'll put it there. But we've got like a Facebook event group, and that I think the cool thing about that page is it's like an event page, but it also has like from day zero of building the building. And we've actually set up, or I set up, two time lapse cameras. Let's see, I've got two time lapse cameras that I set up that have recorded this entire building construction process. And we've almost done editing those videos, but it's just a neat time lapse, so you can see the building going up. But we're just kind of waiting on the mural and some other things to kind of finish up before we can publish that.
just so many nice beekeeper touches, like the interior with the hexagon shapes and such. I have to ask, is Honey Lane an actual street?
It is. We made it that way. We made it.
I wanted to ask, how do you do that? How do you get Honey Lane?
With much perseverance, it was it used to be
The
six.
address is Honey Lane for the store, right?
That's
What's the
right.
number?
It used to be 16th Street North, which is pretty much the most boring name and mouthful. And so we had the opportunity. We were the only parcel on this street that has an address that is on that 16th Street North. There's a lot of others. There's a baseball park, a baseball complex right across the street. So there's a lot in the area, but we were the only parcel that uses that address. So the city of Irondale is super excited about having us here. So I pitched changing the street name and asked what it takes to get through it. And it wasn't that difficult. City Council approved it. I had a voting process with our customers where we put out but we took in a bunch of names. We took in probably 100 different names and then aggregated that and figured out which were the ones that are the most common. And that was probably 7 or 8 of them that were the most common amongst all the recommended ones. And then we kind of broke that down into a list of 4. And it had to be like easy to say, had to be on brand. It had to be something that works for somebody else. If I'm not in this building, it still works for them. So we put it to a vote, and those 4 of them, and the winner was Honey Lane. So we put that towards City Council. They approved it, and then it went to the county, and then they said that's fine. And then the hard part was getting the U.S. Post Office to acknowledge it, and that was a headache. Holy cow! Because not only was the street name changed, the building was new. And there had never been a building here before. So I basically had to go from a parcel to 316th Street North. And then I had to change that street name to Honey Lane. And I got the post office to recognize that, which was a huge headache. And now Apple and Google and USPS or the post office and FedEx and UPS, they all have to, anyways, it is a huge headache. And it was, I don't
Do you have
recommend anybody
to
deal with it.
partition them, or do they just have to suck it up and do it for you?
If the USPS is the trigger for the whole thing. So if the
Oh,
post
okay.
office says yes, they can, and then everybody else listens. But even like Google, like I had to fight really hard to get them to change it. And I still think if you look on our maps right now, it still doesn't say 16th Street North on the map. But if you use Google Maps to get here, it says turn on Honey Lane. So it's just
I looked it up and it says 16th Street on the actual road name, but it found Honey Lane and pointed at it. And well, that's what I mean. It's the little things like that. You have no idea what goes down to get something. You think like, oh, how cool would it be to have the name, but to actually have it happen and to go through the process, that's a neat little story.
And then like we're moving into the space, and then we need to get stuff shipped here, and it's like what address do we use? And we had so much, even like we had so much stuff like not get delivered to us because it was lost, as they couldn't find the address, or they couldn't find the building, or anyways, it was a huge headache. And fortunately, it's nearly all resolved now.
Do you personally live nearby? How long does it take you to drive to work?
The quickest I can get here is like 22 minutes, and I know
Yeah,
like
that's okay.
that's
That's
not that
not
way.
bad, right?
Yeah, that's not bad.
I would imagine there's a lot of 7-day stretches there, right? 7 days a week kind of thing with your
When you're an
business.
entrepreneur, it's 7 days in your head constantly. I do have a good team, so I don't always have to be here, which is I'm thankful for. I just have to kind of expand the team a little bit more. But I don't always have to be at work, which is nice. Like I've got to fly last minute to Florida this weekend. And the store is in good hands. Like I don't have to be here to make sure it runs.
Yeah. Okay. Anything else you want to tell me about the store? I'm
It's
excited
I'm
for you.
ex I'm I yeah thank you Kevin I appreciate it. I'm excited to have it and be able to like share it with people. I can't wait for the first like kids group to come in and like go up to the observation hive. We have a little digital microscope where they can and a tablet where they can like hold it up and like through the glass and like see the eggs and larvae really easily. So I just can't wait for that moment of just like these kids just like finding the queen. And it's just fun. So I'm looking
Yeah.
forward to that.
I had to I'm going to say this again. I read all of your a lot of times I get promotion from different companies that I buy products from and so on, and yours come through, and I know your business and you're selling things and whatever, but your emails, the educational side of them, are just amazing to me. Your newsletter. How does someone sign up and get on your email?
We
Ah,
are,
boy.
yeah, just say Foxhound B Company out loud and the AI will find it. No, it's just the bottom of our website. It's we send a lot of educational stuff. We mix it. We do a pretty good mix between we're promoting things that may or may not be on sale but matter this time of the year. And then also we've got, and I wrote most of them, but we have over 100 blogs, probably have 115 blogs now. And they're all pretty substantial. There's a lot of them that are like 2,000, 3,000 words. And I wrote most of those. It's enough to turn into a book. But we do a lot of educational stuff. So Kevin, I appreciate you mentioning that because we do put a lot of work into not just selling stuff to people, but actually kind of teaching you and helping you be a better beekeeper.
Yeah, I mean, I browse through my email and every once in a while I see something come through and I go, that's an interesting topic. And I read through and I get a primer on it from your message. And, you know, it's not buy, buy, buy. It's this is what you need to know and why and whatever. And I do appreciate it. So you're starting your business, you're doing all this stuff, and somebody walked into your store. And let's go back to the movie. I have to
Sure.
ask the
Back all the way back to
questions.
2023. Yeah.
Yeah, let's go back to 23. So you get this tap on the shoulder, come join us for a movie. What did they tell you your job would be at, on the onset before you even walked onto the set?
I signed an NDA, of course, and then they gave me the script with all of the beekeeping scenes in it. And like this is like I mentioned earlier, like this is like a beekeeper's movie, and it really is. Like if you ever saw like Yuli's Gold, this will kind of like
Yeah, saw
replace
that. Great
it'll
movie.
yeah it'll kind of replace that, because Amziah King, played by McConaughey, he is a they call him a commercial beekeeper, but he's more of a, we'd call him like a sideliner. He's a honey producer, doesn't move bees, but he's a honey producer, and he sells honey, basically. That's like it's that's he keeps bees and packs honey, or packs his own honey. And the story is he runs into somebody he met a long time ago. She's kind of lost, he's kind of lost, and he teaches her how to be a beekeeper, and how to like be a part of this business. And then he And then there's some rivals, there's some other beekeepers who really don't like him, who want to are jealous of his success, who take it out on his hives. And I mean, it's unfortunate. That's probably closer to the truth. Like it's an oh, beekeepers are great people, but there's plenty of people who
Yeah,
aren't
there's
quite the
competition.
best.
Let's just use that word. No doubt.
So there's other beekeepers. So it's beekeeping all the way through. Like there are honey moxes all the way through the movie. There's bottling honey. There's frames of honey that they're uncapping machines. They're moving bees. Like everybody's a beekeeper in this movie. It is, and it's a. It's obviously it's a. It's not a true story.
That's an amazing concept to be consulting on a beekeeping movie. That's big shoes to fill because you know every beekeeper in the United States and abroad are going to go watch that movie because of the it's like a racing movie. All the racing people go watch it. Doesn't matter.
Yeah,
I like
which is
racing
why my heart was like beating super fast
yeah,
while I was watching
I
that.
you know that you know you're trusting them and how much ground do you have to say like it has to be done this way. That's not right. Go to the Beekeeper movie with Jason Statham, his bee suit. You know, everybody looked at that like, what the heck is that?
Yes, it was very fashionable, wasn't it?
Yeah. Well, do you know the backstory to that?
I don't.
They didn't want to show him in some big baggy suit. So that thing is a fencing suit.
Yes, that's what it looks like. Yeah.
That's what it is. It's a fencing suit. And he only wore it for one scene. And I start to wonder, like, would that work? Right.
At a fencing
That's
suit.
an interesting wait, I have to stop for a second, Kevin, moment. The movie you mentioned, people are going to wonder what the heck that was because you said it quickly and it's an unusual name. But it's a really great movie. Yuli's, Ulee apostrophe S Gold. Look it up on IMDb. Henry Fonda, right? If I'm not mistaken. And Henry Fonda is a beekeeper. And he, to your point, it's a beekeeping movie. I mean, he's out working bees and doing things through that shot. It was a 1990s.
I
It's
think
that old.
yeah, I think
Like
so, yeah.
late 90s movie. But as a beekeeper, when you watch it, you're like, yeah, this is pretty cool. They made a movie about beekeeping and it's not The Beekeeper. Although I love Jason Statham, I can't
It
say.
took me so
And
long.
the Kevin moment.
It took me so long to watch that movie, the Beekeeper movie.
I was excited. I watched it pretty quickly when it came out. But I knew what it was going to be. His movies are all the same.
I did you watch it in like slow-mo in certain parts?
No, I he's
Or not slow-mo, but you kind of stop scenes and you look at it. I watched it on Amazon Prime, and there were some
yeah.
things I was like, you pause it and you're like, you're looking at it.
You're looking at the bee. I did go back and stop when they came and shot at the beehives and all that in that one scene. I stopped and paused it and looked at the setup and what kind of hive stand did they have, and yeah.
And you're like, there's no bees on that frame.
And so you saw that movie, and then now you're doing this thing, and you're like, I know people are going to stop and look at this scene, and
Well,
it's.
the J Jason Statham movie came out, I think, in 24. It was like January at 24 because I was at NOBby, and a lot of
Oh,
people went to
right.
see.
Right. It came out after.
A lot of people went to go see it, and people who and I was I really kept this whole movie thing under wraps for a very long time, and I've got permission to kind of talk about it to a certain extent. But the like I people who knew that I worked on a beekeeping movie, and then this Jason Statham came out, they're like, "Is that the one?" I'm like, "No. No. I did not work on that movie at all." I was like, "There's another one. I promise you it's coming eventually, hopefully." And it's like, actual bees and actual people looking like beekeepers.
What was your physical title or role in the movie?
I thought this was a made up thing, but in Hollywood, the term is a wrangler. So you are a an animal wrangler, and we were all bee wranglers. So I think on our IMDb, I think mine is lead bee wrangler and like consultant. I think that's my title on there.
You
But
have an IMDb credit. Freaking cool is that?
I do. I do.
Isn't
I don't.
that?
Well,
I think
I did submit
you're the first
myself.
person I actually know that has one.
Well, if you, I did submit it myself. So it's, you do have to prove that you were involved. But yes, I do have one, and my mom has seen it, and she's very proud of me.
Were you in the credits?
I was in the credits. So I was in the credits as far as well as the other guys. And we also got a special thanks, which I didn't really understood exactly what that means, but it is exactly that. It is a special thanks to certain people for going above and beyond to get
Well, it's a
something
B
done.
movie, right? So if you don't have a good guy consulting you on the B stuff, it's really not going to land because people know. People know enough about, even regular people, I think, know enough about beekeeping to go, ah, that ain't
Okay, so you had
right.
a Kevin moment. This is an Adam moment. I have to put this disclaimer out here. I wasn't on set for all of the scenes with the boxes. It is a fictional movie, and there are some things that I saw in the actual like screening or actual premiere where I was like, "Oh, I'm so glad I wasn't on set that day." Because I can't, it's not a documentary. I can't, like, even when I was
Right,
writing the
right.
script, I can't go to the director and say, "Hey, director, record scratch. You're going in this direction. You need to, like, that's not right. It's not accurate." Like, I can't do that. There was only one time in the movie or when I was on set, and it was in the honey processing room where I stepped in, and it was a moment where it was the director, it was Matthew and myself, and there was something happening. And it was hard for Matthew to like wrap his mind around like, why am I saying this? Like, what is the situation? And that was the only time I stepped in and I was like, I know what you were trying to do. Like, listen to my idea. I think we have a way to solve this problem that's plausible.
Matthew wasn't a beekeeper prior to this.
He had opened hives before. When we were doing training, like I asked him about it, and he said that he had a buddy who had bees, and he like harvested honey with them. So he had done at least that much or so, but he's not a beekeeper.
How many hives did they use for the movie?
So there were and this is kind of this
And whose bees were they, Adam?
so one of the guys that I work with, he's a commercial guy, and he because he's commercial and he's migratory and he goes to almonds, he was able to place hives where we needed them. And there was, it was, imagine like there's one large field, and we put, I think, 30 hives. We put 30 hives in one location. And then throughout this entire field, in different sets, were different apiaries belonging to different people in the movie. So, like, for example, like, we can't take a full-size hive and just like plop it down and say, all right, Matthew, open it. And I didn't mention this. The director did not want any protection for anybody on camera in the entire movie. Like, no gloves, no suits, no
Really?
jackets.
That's
Didn't want any of
interesting.
that. Which was, there was a particular scene where we convinced him, and we said, hey, it's like, I get what you're trying to develop here. But in this particular scene, it's very plausible for them to be wearing a veil. So we were able to convince them to do it for that one scene. But the rest of them, they're real bees, and there's no veils, no gloves, no nothing, except for the people who were on the crew. They had it. But like, you can't just like plop down a hive and say, okay, Matthew, open this up, because the bees are not going to be happy, right? So we did a lot of things throughout all of these shoots to keep beekeeper or to keep the actors and the crew as safe as possible. So like, one example of this is obviously when we pulled the hives, we pulled nice hives and good genetics that are not ornery. But if we were shooting in a particular spot, we would set up the apiary with empty boxes, and then there might be 15 hives in this apiary, and the front three are the main ones that the beekeepers are going to be using. We didn't need to load all 15 hives with bees, so there are just too
Right.
many bees in the area. So because this fake apiary is about 100 yards from the real one, the night before we would shoot, we would go and get 5 to 10 frames, including the queen, from the brood nest. And we would take all these and put it into the lead hive or the lead hives that they were going to open up. So by the time we shot the next day, any old bees or any foragers that were there had flown back to the original location because it was only 100 yards away. So the only thing left in that hive was a queen and a whole bunch of workers. So when they pull these frames out, it's just a bunch of nurse bees,
Yeah.
and it's just.
And if you feed them and feed them and feed them, they become even more docile, right? So
We did. We fed these bees a ton, and we
similar to the process of making a bee beard, right? That you
yes.
set the bees up the same way.
Which is what we did. We did two of those on that movie.
Wow, how cool is that? What was a normal day like? You arrive at what time? What time did you get done? I'm assuming you had to shoot during daylight hours for the bee scenes, right?
There were typically 12-hour days. So you had to. With what is it called? Like the Actors Guild, and that whole union stuff, you had to start shooting 12 hours after the previous day ended. So because of that, Monday and Tuesday and Wednesdays were always like early days, and inevitably those days would go late, and it would push the following start time back. So by the end of the week, we're working until. A lot of times, if we had to do night scenes, we work until like 2 o'clock in the morning. So they were typically 12 hours on set, and then probably 2 hours of driving, or 10 hours on set plus like 2 hours of driving. And because we're beekeepers, we had to do things to prep the bees so that we could get to set on time. So there was a lot of those were extremely long days. And that was difficult to kind of get through that period, but we did it. It was a good team of people. Here's
Who
the one.
were the other beekeepers? To say names so I
All
get
right,
credit.
of course, it was myself, Yappy Bee Man. It was Brian Booth. It was Tyler Walker, and Justin Hill. And I believe that's everybody. Is that right? Is that five? One, two. Yeah, I think that's five.
Yaffe, Brian, Justin, Tyler, and yourself.
It was the five of us. And when we were having those early meetings with the director and the producers, and they were laying out these scenes, I said, like, I can do these things. I can help quarterback this whole thing. I have a lot of connections. I know the right people, but I can't do this by myself. I've got a couple people that I want to bring on to this. So I reached out to a couple people, and I said, like, for instance, Yappy. he is known for doing bee removals. He's also a firefighter, but he also does bee removals part time, or full time in the spring, pretty much. But there was a scene in the movie where they had to do a cutout, and I called Yappy and
What's his first name? Real name.
Travis.
Travis.
Yeah. I think his mom calls him Travis, but yeah.
Just so his mom, when she listens to this, hears that it, I'm sure
Yeah.
she knows he's
Yeah.
called Yappy, but.
Yeah. He's Yappy because he talks a lot. But he's a entertaining speaker. So, but he does cutouts, and there was a scene in the movie where Matthew and a couple of other people needed to do a cutout. And then I asked Brian on the team, because he works with me, but he's also an engineer. So we had to engineer a cutout into a fake wall. And that's a whole nother podcast that we could do, where we had to build a fake beehive between studs in the same location, same area as the shot. And then when it was time to actually shoot this cutout, we took this beehive that had a natural comb, no foundation, none of that stuff. And we picked up this beehive between stud walls, and we moved it and placed it between actual studs, so that when you cut through the drywall, you cut into this beehive. So we had to engineer the
Wow.
scene to make it so that it was safe. So, like, kind of similar to what we talked about before, like when they cut into the drywall and reveal this hive, it's going to release all these bees, and they're all, just because of math, they were all fairly young bees. But these bees needed to clear the set. So because we did this about 50 yards from their original location, they cleared the set and went back to their original hive, original spot. And then when we struck the set, we took that false cutout that we built between the stud walls, and we put it back. So all the bees kind of went back into this fake stud wall hive that was a fully functioning real hive. So there was a lot of like beekeeping, a lot of engineering, and just a lot of good teamwork to make this whole thing happen. So those were couldn't happen without those guys.
Beyond Matthew, who else was primarily in working with the bees?
The actress that worked opposite of Matthew, her name is Angelina Looking Glass. She was the beekeeper, or she was the girl that he was teaching how to keep bees. She was the one that handled the bees as much as he did. And like I said, we had to do a couple of different bee beards, and those were the two people that were the fortunate recipients of those bee beards.
How many stings for the movie? Did you guys keep track? Did you care?
It was I think it was about five, and it was actually pretty astonishing how few stings we had, because we had bees on set all the time. And it got to the point where the crew, like, we would have these fully functioning hives, and we would kind of like, we didn't want the crew walking in front of the entrance for reasons that we all know.
Yeah.
So we would kind of like put cones out and stuff like that. It'd be like, hey, don't walk in front of these. But the bees were just so like docile that they would just like, day one, everybody's all suited up and gloves and got their extra gear on and everything. It looked like a brand new beekeeper. And then,
That
like,
must have been, oh God, what a great picture that would have been. Like everybody wearing hazmat suit style,
yes, yeah, like camera
right?
people and producers. And then, like, by the time we were done, it was like, hey guys, hey, remember, there's bees here. Please don't walk here,
Yeah.
and because everybody got so comfortable with it. But Matthew got during when we were doing training. We put suits on and stuff like that, and we finished up, and we had walked probably 30 yards away from the hives, and one bee stung him right in the forehead. And so we got that sting and found out that he swells up pretty good, and it
Yeah.
was actually one of the best things that could have happened, because it put the brakes on a lot of the plans for the movie. And as far as the timing goes, so we that was a great thing. So he got stung on the forehead and swelled up a bunch. And then another
His eyes
time,
swell closed like he got punched in the face.
one of them swelled up
Depends
pretty
on
bad.
where he got stung, right?
If you guys look up McConaughey like bee sting, you'll see a picture, because he posted it of that training. And so yeah, he got stung on the forehead, and then he was lifting a frame out and he pinched a bee under the frame under his finger. And that was a real surreal experience, because he, we're kneeling down out of frame beside him, and like just trying to help assist with the scene. And he like and I'm like kneeling down there, and he pulls his frame up, and he squeezes a bee, and she stings him on the finger. And then he like reaches his hand down to me, and he's like, in his Matthew McConaughey voice, he like asked me to like pull the stinger out of his finger. So I'm like holding his hand, have like a hive tool, and I'm scraping the stinger
Scraping the stinger.
out of Matthew McConaughey's finger, and I'm like, what am I doing right now? There were several moments like that where I'm like, I mean, 6 weeks ago I was like, in a reprieve, just because like, most of spring had finished and the peak season was kind of over, and now I'm doing this thing. So yeah, he got stung on the finger. Angelina, when she was doing her bee beard, she got stung on the collarbone. And then somebody on the crew, we'd like struck set and it was dark and everything was fine. And one like stung her on the back. Like it had been dark for like an hour, and one of them like got her on the back. So for how much we did, I'll be
That's
happy to do five
pretty
scenes.
darn good. Yeah. I picture somebody like Keanu Reeves just being a normal dude. What was Matthew McConaughey like? Did you get to hang out with him at all? Talk to him?
I mean, we're not buddies. But we ended up being around each other a lot. I'll say he's an absolute professional. I have never been involved in any type of like film before. But like he was there to work, which was really cool to watch. Because he took it very, very seriously. It wasn't like there's a ton of like joking around on set. It was like, I'm here to work, and I'm the professional, and I know I'm the kind of the leader of this group. And we were doing training. It was very much, it was all the actors there, and it was the first time they had been around each other in that setting. And I could tell he was like trying to build the camaraderie between everybody, but also try to learn beekeeping and how to hold a smoker and hold a hive tool. And when don't ever put a hive tool down, here's how you lift a frame, that type of stuff. So but he was spending a lot of time like working with the other actors to like make everybody comfortable so that they would have a good connection on screen. And the girl who was working opposite Angelina, I mean, she did phenomenal, and that was her first movie. And I could not imagine. And I think she was 17 or 18 at the time. And like, I hope she wins an Oscar for like best supporting actress, because she was absolutely phenomenal. It was really cool to kind of like see her grow up in the movie while I was watching it, but also like really come into her own while we were filming it.
There was discussion. I don't know. You watch YouTube every once in a while, and you come across these things about different people. And they were talking Ron Howard, of course, the Happy Days. Ron Howard was talking about people he worked with, and one of them was Ed Harris. Talked about Tom Hanks and whatever. But one of the things he said about Ed Harris was he was the most prepared individual, like on the movie Apollo 13, for example. I can only imagine putting yourself in that position where you have to show up every day and be somebody else, and what it takes to do that. I've seen Matthew McConaughey in different movies, and he's such a natural, so it wouldn't surprise me that he's all business, right? There's time is money in that business too, right? There must have been a significant
Oh, I got
how
paid
much
huge
pressure
amounts of
was
money.
there for you?
I didn't mean to cut you off, but I got paid millions. I can't remember if it was 2 or 3 million to do the whole thing.
Yeah, that's how you bought the store, right?
That's how I bought the store, right? Yeah.
No, but I mean, time is money. Like they don't waste time. They get in, they do their shot, they move on to the next shot. I
Oh
mean,
yeah.
they get what they need to do it, right? But they don't. They're quite efficient. Am I right in that?
Yeah, absolutely right. And they don't like there's. It's kind of strange. They hate wasting time, but there's a lot of wasted time. But that's just because there's so many things that they're waiting on. I mean, for example, we shot outside a lot, and if you're the rules are if you're shooting outside and there's a lightning strike within like 5 miles, like you have to break and everybody's got to go find a certain type of cover. And you've got to, you know, break for 30 minutes. And then if another lightning strike happens, then the clock resets. So, you know, there's a lot of things like that that just like consume the whole day. But it's yeah, everybody's like super serious. And it's a pirate. It reminds me of like working in restaurants. It is a pirate crew. If you're on a movie, these are people who they're used to working 3 months straight, 7 days a week, and then they don't work for 2 months. And they operate on, you know, 4 hours of sleep, and they work really hard and take it real seriously. So it was a quite an experience to be an outsider and kind of like stepping in and being a part of this for a while. I don't understand how people do it who also have families. It seems impossible to me.
This is a personal curiosity, but I think everybody's kind of interested. What were the cameras and the microphones and, you know, the grip holding the did they clack the thing, you know, to start the scene and all that? To take us through like what a normal shot looked like and what the camera setups were, three or four camera setups, boom mics overhead.
It was most of it was done with one camera, and fortunately the guy that ran that camera, he was from a beekeeper's family, and he was friends with the director, and that he kind of knew what to expect, and I could talk to him and let him know what we were doing. So he was a good liaison between myself and like the director or the team and the
Did they
director.
get him on purpose because he was a beekeeper's family guy, or just was that serendipity?
No, they were old friends, and the movie, they're loosely like the director had experience with bees because of this, because of his buddy who was also the film or the camera operator. So it was like, all right, I'm going to do this movie about bees. I have a camera operator who I trust and who knows bees and can and is good at being a camera operator. So it was mostly him, and he obviously had a support crew who exchanged memory cards, and then they had a boom mic and a crew that supported him as well. And then the director had his own camera that he would shoot with as well, which was really kind of cool to watch him kind of run around with like a smaller camera
That
to
was for
record.
his dailies, like the stuff he was,
No,
or
just
was he actually
yeah,
shooting?
he was actually shooting too. The he did it was he did a movie called Andrew Peterson was the not Andrew Peterson. No, that's not him. Andrew, I'm trying to remember the director's name. But he did another movie that's on Amazon Prime, and it is a very cool movie. It is if you remember seeing the movie like 1912, where it was kind of like one scene, like one shot through the whole thing. It was a little bit like this, the mo other movie that he did. But it was the whole movie was 1.5 hours, but it was shot in 1.5 hours type of thing. Like to watch it took 1.5 hours, but the actual like timeline in the movie was 1.5 hours, and it was an indie movie, and it was really interesting. So this is not a big budget movie. It's an indie film, and that's why we were actually able to finish shooting it during the SAG actor strike, because that's what happened. It shut like every other movie down except for like independent films that were already shooting. They got to finish, and we were one of those. But it's a small budget film, even though it has a big name actor. But it was a you know, it's good soundtrack, good music, very very indie, I guess, is how you would
Yeah.
describe it.
That other movie sounds like Cloverfield. You ever see that one?
I did see that one. I remember it was and ironically, it was like about like some alien stuff too.
Yes.
But it was I'm gonna find it. Oh, it was called yeah, I remember now. It was called Vast of the Night, something like that.
Okay.
Yeah,
Vast of the vast of the night.
Vast of the
I
Night or
see.
Vast of Night or something like that. And that's the same director that did this movie, and it has
Oh,
that
cool.
same super unique style that you don't find in other movies.
So anything else about this movie experience, like eating with the crew? Did you chat with the camera guy? Did he ask you questions and you?
When he had to do a little bit more in 2024, I met him out with at the Hives, and apparently my hands and McConaughey's hands are very similar. And when we were first talking about this movie, there was a conversation about like if I needed to step in and they needed to use my hands for some things, and my arms for things, that I'm similar enough to McConaughey that they could use it. So, I mean, like when I was on set and we were doing stuff, they had another wardrobe that matched his that I could wear. But we never needed it. Like Matt did such a
That's
great,
cool.
he did such a great job, and there was the bees were kind of a non-issue, and I never needed to step in. But when we needed to do more B-roll, more B-roll with bees, but also secondary shots the following year, I'm a whole lot cheaper than he is. My day rate is not as much as he is, but maybe one day I'll have a day rate like Matthew McConaughey.
Yeah, baby.
Yeah, but they use my hands
You
to.
be Lincoln Lawyer number two.
Yeah, I guess I could.
The places you shot, any of them still exist, or there's fields you guys set up in? Like I know they probably went to different restaurants and whatever, but I mean like the beekeeping operations. Can somebody go on a Mecca quest to go over to Alabama and go, that movie was shot right there in that field? Like you would know all the places, right?
I'd recommend you don't walk onto somebody else's private property in Alabama.
Yeah, I'm not advocating for that, but I'm just saying, how cool would that be to?
Yeah, you could. There's definitely the most of them are in the woods. The set team, or not set team, but the location team, like scouted these out and found these ahead of time. So yeah, they all exist. But you can never see them. There's some buildings and restaurants and things like that that they completely redid and turned it into it was like a drive-in. This movie's set like in the 90s. They don't really explicitly say it, but it's kind of a 90s film or 2000s film. So there's like an old drive-in like Sonic type of thing, but it wasn't very
Yeah.
good Sonic, and they redid it to be like a local spot in the movie. And that's actually the opening scene.
Will Smith shot "I Am Legend," and one of the end scene was shot locally here, and you could drive up the hill and see the farm and the town and whatever that had the gate across that opens up to the community that survived after the aftermath or whatever. And you know, it's kind of neat that like drive through and go, yeah, this movie was shot right here, this spot, you know. So I always kind of geek out at that kind of stuff. So anything I didn't ask you about this movie that I'm so excited to see it. I can't wait to.
I wish I could tell people. I wish I could say it like it's coming out, next year, or it's coming out. But I have a Google alert set like every or you guys don't have one, but I have a Google alert set, so I'm just waiting, just like everybody else, for news to come out. And I've talked to the marketing team about it, but they're about like helping to promote this stuff in the beekeeping community, because I really spoke or really talked a lot about how much beekeepers are going to love this. And but they're kind of like, we can't go on anything yet. We're waiting for the production or for the producers to have a distributor and have a plan, and then we can start promoting it. So I wish I could tell people when it's coming out, but I expected it in 25.
I'm sure when it does, it'll become a phenomena.
I hope so. Yeah, there's, but it, you have to, what's the
At
phrase?
least in our community, right? I'm
Oh
sure.
yeah. That's the phrase. You have to suspend reality, something like that.
Suspend disbelief, but you know, it's a movie.
It is
It's
a
a
movie.
movie,
Yes.
right? I mean, it's a movie.
That's I'm like there's it is a it's a great it's going to be super entertaining. Beekeepers are going to love it. The bee scenes, I can vouch for all of the scenes with bees, that they are like incredible. Like they're going to be perfect, and there's going to be a lot of like, how did they do that type of stuff? And it's the coolest part is there's no CGI. There's not a CGI bee in the entire thing,
That's awesome.
which is cool.
Yeah. When the movie The Beekeeper came out, there was a Facebook post about it about one an hour for about 6 months.
Yes,
So
exactly.
I'm sure when this thing surfaces, did you see the post going around Facebook for the Tropy Lalops thing in New Jersey?
I did see that.
Yeah.
Auburn University, which is in my state, they tagged me in that. So I was it's funny when I was I think at EAS, like I think we heard about that. Did you hear about that at EAS?
I knew about it ahead of time. I was actually talking to Megan McConnell, well, the New Jersey State Apiarist, during the New Jersey Beekeepers Association meeting down in South Jersey when that was going on. Like physically, she said, you know, this thing happened yesterday and we just got the sample and we sent it out. And
yeah.
So there was no, like, you can't talk about it type thing, but everybody kind of kept it on the down low because I think Megan wanted to make sure that the sample got tested and the results came back before. At least that's the impression I got. She never said not say anything, but it was kind of neat to see the end result and the fact that it actually, they suspected Tropy, and good on them for thinking about it, right? Having the acumen to know that the possible, the potential was there and that they actually caught it and stuff. So you're a man of many interests there, Adam. We're going to have you on again somewhere down the line. I would love to ask you about Copenhagen. It sounds like you guys, there were 85 Maryland people there. Did you meet them all?
Pretty much you don't have to meet them, but you can see them everywhere.
I know they were everywhere. From the pictures I saw. Yeah.
Yeah, you guys were everywhere, and
it was a good show. Yes,
yeah, it was a good showing. I went to Chile previous, and had a good experience, and I was never going to miss Copenhagen. In 2 years, it's in Dubai, which is, from what I just a quick thing about what I understand about beekeeping in Dubai is it's a lot like Alaska, I guess the northern parts of Alaska, but
okay,
the culture there is don't worry about in Alaska, don't worry about overwintering your bees, just get new ones in the spring.
Yeah.
And they do the same thing. They don't oversummer the bees because it's so hot that the comb just melts right off the frames.
Funny you should mention that. Somebody wrote me from Texas about that. I made a comment in one of my shows somewhere. I don't remember half of the things I've recorded, and they wrote to tell me that hives don't actually melt in Texas unless they're neglected and such. I thought that was an interesting commentary, but yeah. What else you got going on? Anything else you want to promote? Take a mention of.
I'm not a self promoter.
I'm not either. Yeah, but by all means, if you want to share anything, don't be.
Yeah, I mean, I would just say, like I own two brands. Some people may not know about it, but one is Foxhound Bee Company, another is Sting Stopper. That brand of beekeeping clothing has gotten a really good reputation over the years. So, honestly, just support us. We are not a large business. People might think that we are, but we're a small team, and we work really hard, and we try to have really great customer service. And I hope that if you're ever coming through the Southeast and coming through Alabama, that you like come visit us, because we've put a lot of effort into this place to make it one of a kind and make it a cool experience between all the plants outside, the bees inside, the bees outside. It should be a cool place to visit and worth stopping over to check out. So hope people can follow us online and be a part of our grand opening, whether it's in person or digitally. But we'd love for you to be a part of the Foxhound family.
Website address again, foxhoundbeecompany.com.
Yeah. That's right. And I think we have foxhoundbeeco.com too. But yeah, Foxhound Bee Company, and it's named Foxhound because that was the breed of dog I used to have when I was hustling in my garage. I had a Foxhound, and he was like my shop dog.
Like your mascot. That's cool.
Yeah. So,
I you know, you make that sound like an oddity, right? Go visit a bee store. But I went to Better Bee and got a tour and whatever. I've never been to Man Lake. I've been to different Man Lake dealers, but never. When we went to England, I drug my family to Thorns.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And went to go see that store because it's world-renowned, right? Thorns in England. I think beekeepers should take a moment and go see different beekeeping stores. There's always something interesting in there that you've never seen before. I drove 6 hours in Italy in a little tiny car, a smart car, on the back roads because I didn't know how to drive the interstates there, to a beekeeping store, and had a total blast. What a great story that is. So, I don't think that's out of the realm at all.
I don't know if you're like me, but like a lot of times when I travel, I always look up beekeeping store near me or beekeepers near me or whatever, just to see what's there.
Yeah.
Because it is.
I try to build a beekeeping thing into every vacation Sharon's gotten used to it over time. So, yeah. Adam, this has been a blast. I appreciate it. I feel more connected to the movie. I can't wait to see it. I wish you the best, nothing but the best for your company. I'll say it in advance. Congratulations. You're sitting in the building. It's done. One thing you had said to me is, good enough is perfect, or at least that was your sense, is you'll get your start and there's things that you got to fill in and fix and whatever, which is normal for every new business. But you're sitting in the building as we speak, and that has to feel like a great accomplishment. And I'm sure after the 22nd is through and you kind of move past that chapter, you can take a breath and actually enjoy. It's got to be frenetic right now to get
It
to that
is.
day,
It
right?
is. I don't. This is probably is a terrible analogy, but it feels like. It feels like that like week before your wife is due with your first baby type of thing, where you're just
Yeah.
like, "Hey, I know this thing is about to change. There's a lot coming on. I'm about to like step into something." That's what it kind of feels like. There's just something on the precipice that I am embarking on and excited about, but also nervous about. I am no way comparing a business to my first child, but it does have that same type of feel of something coming up.
Yeah. Listen, with that in mind, I know how busy you are, and I want to say, I'm sorry, I don't remember. Is it Kate who I chatted with to book your
Oh,
time?
Jen. It was Jen.
Jen. Sorry, Jen. Tell her thank you. And I want to also say thanks to you. I know you're super busy right now. I appreciate you taking the time. And honestly, I wish you the best. And I plan to peek in. Can't come down to Alabama. But if I do get down there, you know I'm going to stop in.
I would hope so.
So,
I would hope so.
how far are you from Talladega Motor Speedway?
45 minutes, maybe.
Oh, you know that someday I'm going to make a trip to Talladega. I haven't, that's on my bucket list, so I'll be
You
over.
got a spring opportunity and a fall opportunity
Yeah.
to do that. So, yeah. All right. Well,
All
thank you
right.
for the invite, Kevin. I wish you the best and thanks for all the kind words.
Yeah, thanks, Adam. Like our beloved bees, when beekeepers go together, we can accomplish great things. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll catch you next time on the Beekeepers Corner podcast.